Are you a parent in a blended family or planning to be one? If so, you need to get answers to a lot of financial questions. I am Rob West. Blended families face more challenges for getting the marriage to work, but getting everything out on the table is a big step toward making that happen. I'll talk about that today with Ron Deal and Greg Pettis. We're off, so please hold your phone calls. This is MoneyWise on American Family Radio. Biblical wisdom for your financial journey. So Ron Deal and Greg Pettis are back with us today. They're co-authors of the Smart Step Family Guide to Financial Planning. And when they were on last month, there wasn't nearly enough time to cover everything on this important topic. So Ron, Greg, great to have you back with us today.
Thank you so much. We enjoy it.
Thank you. Great to be back.
Gentlemen, last time we talked about the togetherness agreement. That's a legal binding contract that you urge all spouses in blended families to draw up. I'm a big fan of it, but to do that, you have to answer some really important questions about money first. I know you have a long list of them on your website at familylife.com/blended, and I want to go over as many of them as we can today. So gentlemen, let's dive right into number one, and that is, what are your financial obligations to your ex-spouse, such as child support and alimony? This is a really important question to get out in the open, isn't it?
Yes, it really is, because it represents how you're going to move forward, and it's going to have a lot of influence into the life that you have together as a couple. Yeah. So whether somebody's listening right now and they're dating or planning to get married or already married, if you haven't discussed this, we say get it out there. Now, the divorce decree, if one of you is divorced or if one of you is widowed, then you may have some thoughts there. But for that person with a divorce decree, that's going to outline the details that really everybody should be familiar with. You and your current spouse or somebody that you're dating. I want to say, even though there's clarity because of the divorce decree, the moral issue is following through with it, right? I have to say this. Unfortunately, some parents fall short of paying child support. Sometimes people get into these little, well, I don't like the way they're parenting, or I don't like the way they spend the money that we, like, that's really not up to you. You have a responsibility and an obligation. You know, the 1 Timothy 5:8 passage, we talk about somebody that does not provide for their relatives, is especially for the members of their own household, the scripture says, has denied the faith. I think that applies to obligations you have to a former spouse. That's your responsibility, and you need to follow through with that.
Well, and Ron, these are you know, very significant financial commitments.
Yes.
When they said I do, I mean, child support can go all the way up through age 18 unless the child is unable to receive self-sufficiency or unless there's attending school full-time up to 4 years. Alimony can last a lifetime, depending on how long one was married and other factors. So these are long commitments.
Yes, that's exactly right. And Greg, then there's the question of additional support for children from the first marriage. What are those?
Well, in some divorce decrees, these extras, we call them, could include the education of the child. And it usually it's a sharing arrangement. You know, it could be according to the spouse's incomes or percentage-wise. But also extracurricular costs. You know, there are more and more children who want to travel with the sports team or summer camps.
Sure.
And not to mention medical and healthcare costs, you know, dental, orthodontic braces, chiropractic care, insurance policies, eye care, glasses, et cetera. There's a lot more that could be piled on.
Yeah, no question about it. Ron, just a minute before our first break, if you're on the receiving end of this, the question is, how should we use what we receive in child support and alimony? And what if we don't receive it?
Well, child support, obviously, that needs to go to the care of the child. You don't get to go on a personal vacation with that sort of thing. You need to provide for your child. Alimony, it's up to you, right? You're able to appropriate that however you want. Now, if you don't get child support, now this obviously breaks into this co-parenting arrangement and what kind of relationship do we have working together as former spouses. When money doesn't change hands, it's difficult. The last thing you want to do is quickly run to court. I think that just creates more problems. But if there's a habitual problem, then maybe you do need to involve an attorney.
Yeah, that's very good. Well, a lot more to come. We're going to unpack a number of questions you need to be talking about as a blended family, or if you're preparing to be a blended family. What about financial plans, retirement assets, parents? That and much more coming up just around the corner. We're joined today by Ron Deal and Greg Pettis, authors of the Smart Step Family Guide to Financial Planning. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Delighted to have you with us today on MoneyWise on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West. Joining me today, my good friends Ron Deal and Greg Pettis, co-authors of The Smart Step Family Guide to Financial Planning. If you are a blended family or you're preparing for an upcoming blended family in your life, this is the resource you need to have, and you can learn a lot more at familylife.com/blended. Today, we're working through a list of questions that you need to put on the table as you're preparing to put together a togetherness agreement, a document you can learn more about on that website. And gentlemen, as we work our way through these questions, Greg, I want to come to you next. There's this huge question of when one of us dies, who will receive the assets brought into our marriage? How should folks think about that?
That is such a powerful question. And you know, Rob, no two blended families are the same.
Yeah.
So it's so important to sit down and do some comprehensive financial planning with, you know, your team of trusted advisors that share your values. That's important. And when you do so, try to divide your goals into needs, wants, and wishes, and prioritize accordingly. And seek expert legal advice and tax counsel before you implement any strategy. But many financial planners conceptually, they look at the growth assets that you brought into your marriage as possible key inheritance assets.
Yeah.
These growth assets get stepped up basis at death. So your children could inherit those and not pay income tax because the basis is stepped up at the date of your death. Income producing assets could be key for your spouse. And the usage of life insurance is always the great equalizer. I'm dealing with high net worth business owners that say 90% of their wealth is in a business. What are we going to do for the children that are not involved in the business? So life insurance can be a great equalizer.
That's really helpful. Ron, I want to follow up on this with you from a spiritual and a relational standpoint. Is it okay if we decide we want to keep assets that were acquired or accumulated prior to marriage separate to give to our kids? Some folks struggle with that spiritually, understanding that God's design for marriage, even a new marriage, is oneness.
Okay, let me break the question down, because on the surface, it sounds like, is it okay to keep my stuff, and not share with my spouse or my spouse's children? But really, the fundamental question here, spiritually speaking, is how do we care for everyone? It could be that we do keep assets within a family line, if you will, from one generation to the next. But like Greg just said, at the same time, we're going to say, but how do we care for the people who are not included in that? It's not like we get and you don't. It's how do we share with everyone something that communicates their value, that it cares for them in a way that's appropriate. So the answer is yes, some things can stay within the family generational line, but there needs to be that reciprocation or consideration, I should say, for the other family members on the other side. What do they get? Maybe it's life insurance that goes their direction, but at the end of the day, everybody is getting what they need.
Yeah, very good. All right, the next one, staying in this category of financial plans, what are the financial plans for your children if you die or are unable to work? And by the way, if you don't have a plan, you need to get one, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. This brings us back to the togetherness agreement that you mentioned at the top that we discussed a little more detail on the last time we were on your program. In a heartbeat, what I want to sum this up, it is, okay, you may have had a plan when you were a single parent and the other person had a plan for their life. Now that you're married, we need to have a togetherness agreement plan that is mindful of each one of us. How do we care for one another should one of us pass away? And at the same time, how do I care for your kids and you care for my kids should the worst happen? That's essentially the heart of what a togetherness agreement is. We are financing togetherness for our family unit, not separateness, not what I get and you don't, not my kids, not your kids, but a togetherness plan. We really believe, Greg and I believe, we're not just figuring out what to do with money with a togetherness agreement. We are helping blended families form a family identity and a sense of solidarity. That's why we call it togetherness, because in the negotiating of the plan, if you will, how we care for each other, we are communicating value to everyone. We are communicating all belong. Nobody's an outsider. All belong and are insiders to this family unit. And that is an expression of love at the end of the day that we think over time facilitates more and more togetherness.
And on the money side, we really would focus, and we would ask others to look at, is the ability to ensure your ability to earn an income. So disability income is one of the most overlooked areas. I mean, our income is the engine that drives all the goals, but also life insurance. I mean, one of the core factors of economic value of a human life is our ability to earn that income. And so looking at multiples of income replacement, if I wasn't here, how many years would my spouse need to replace my income in the form of life insurance? There's rules of thumb, but best to sit down with your planner and let him or her look through your specific needs and your current assets and put together a specific plan for you.
Yeah, that's really helpful. We're working our way through a list of questions you need to put on the table as a blended family, specifically related to finances. Gentlemen, they say you don't just marry a person, you marry their whole family. So this next question that you need to put on the table is, do you have any financial commitments to your parents, siblings, or other family members, right?
Yes. And, you know, we sort of alluded to this already. Maybe your children are invested in your family business. And so there's already this notion that it's going to be passed to them. They're invested. They've been working in it, perhaps, or looking forward to the day when they are working in it. And now the other side of the blended family, if you will, doesn't have any involvement or investment in that. So there's sort of naturally that commitment. But here's the thing that we want relationally for couples to do. I think it's important for, let's say a man owns a business and his oldest son is looking forward to taking it over one day. He, the husband, needs to now explain to his wife what that's all about. What's the story behind my son taking over the business? Yeah. Maybe this is a generational thing. Maybe there's a, hey, we bonded as father and son through the years about all of this. And there's a relational aspect to the history behind the commitment. That helps give some context to a stepmother, for example, so that she's not just seeing, oh, my husband's greedy, he's holding this for his kid. No, there's a story here, and I can respect that story and what's involved there and the meaning that it holds. The next question is what we've said previously. Okay, that's great for your son. What are we doing? How are you going to help provide for me and my kids? That becomes the second question, and it'll have its own answer.
Yeah.
And there are tools that you can pull from the toolbox with your financial planning team that are like Swiss Army knives, so to speak. They utilize every opportunity to help the spouse and the children at your passing. One of them is a qualified terminal interest property trust. We call it a Q-tip. It would reserve assets for your spouse to live from while you're gone. And at their passing, it would revert back to the beneficiaries that you chose, which could be children from a previous marriage or charity.
Ah, a really helpful tool and probably not the Q-tip most people think about when they hear that term. Really helpful, gentlemen. Hey, so many questions, so little time, guys. We're going to have to end it there, but we'll have to have you back again real soon to continue to unpack this. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Greg Pettis and Ron Deal, authors of The Smart Step Family Guide to Financial Planning. The website again, familylife.com/blended. As I said, we're off today, so don't call in, but we've got some great calls lined up in advance, so we'll go to those just around the corner. I'm Rob West, and we'll be right back. Thankful to have you along today on MoneyWise on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West, your host. Phone lines aren't open today since this is a recorded program, but we have some great questions we think you will find helpful. Let's head to Tennessee. Chris, you're next on the program. Go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon. Just need some help in managing a 401. I have a 401 which has a lot of my retirement in it, and it's with a large Fortune 500 company. A couple years ago, I'm in my upper 50s. I had diversified some of it throughout the variety of options and had more concentration into some bonds. And, of course, with the interest rates rising, a lot of that has taken a pretty significant hit. And I'm just trying to determine whether to continue to leave things where they are as hopefully over time things improve, or to make changes now, or if there's someone that can help advise through that.
Yeah, very good. So it's a Fortune 500 company, a 401k, and you're still employed there, Chris?
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay. And do you mind if I ask your age and roughly what you have in that account?
I'm 57, and currently it's about $570,000, but that's after about a $75,000 drop.
Yeah. And what percent is in bonds versus stocks?
I would say more than half, definitely more than half, probably about 3/4.
Okay. And did you make that determination yourself, or do you have somebody advising you?
No, that was me.
Okay. Yeah. And so your attempt was to try to be on the more conservative side, correct?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, you know, this just to encourage you, you didn't make a mistake. And this is an unusual period where we've almost never seen anything like this, where the stock market is falling as quickly as it is. And because rates are rising so rapidly and so quick, so rapidly, but in such a significant, change from where they were to where they are today, we've seen these bond prices just really fall. Now, as the Fed starts to, indicate that they're going to stop raising rates, or if next year, as the economy continues to cool, we see, the interest rates start to fall, not only will these yields continue to be very attractive, but we will also see a rise in the bond price. So I think, if that's really the allocation you're looking for and trying to be on the more conservative end, you've already experienced the lion's share of the downside in terms of the actual bond prices and what they've done because of interest rates. So I would stick it out, because I think what you're going to see is a leveling of those prices. You're now going to enjoy the higher yields. I would want to be on the shorter end of the bond durations. So the bond mutual funds that you're in should be, not long-term bonds, but probably short-term to medium-term at the most. And then you're going to see those stabilize, and then your portfolio will benefit from those higher rates. The Fed won't leave the rates where they are today forever, so eventually that will come back down, and you still got time on your side to see all of that recover. So I think you're probably in a pretty good spot. I think the only question would be, do you want to wait to get advice between, now, or do you want to wait until you retire, until you're ready to roll it out of the 401k into, let's say, an IRA, and then have an advisor manage it for you? I mean, this is a significant amount of money that you've accumulated. And even though you have a limited universe of investments inside the plan, it would still, I think you could make the argument that, having a professional look over all of those investment options and help you not only select the right allocation, but the actual, individual funds that would be used, could make some sense, just to, make sure you're protecting what you've got and growing it in the most prudent way possible, given your age, risk tolerance, and time horizon. But if you feel like, I'm comfortable with this allocation, I just want to know, do I stay with the bonds or not? I would say I would probably stick it out and know that, it will recover, and then, get ready and be ready to select that advisor when you retire, so that where you're ultimately going to transfer this and who's going to be managing it. Does that make sense?
It does. I guess my biggest concern is time on my part, as far as having the time to really put into finding a good advisor and that I feel comfortable with. And so that's kind of been probably my biggest hurdle is, I'm a healthcare professional in the middle of a pandemic, and it's been a bit challenging. So.
Yeah, I totally get it. Well, here at MoneyWise, we trust the Certified Kingdom Advisor designation. This is the only industry-accepted designation for financial professionals who have either had 10 years of experience or they already have another professional designation like a CFP or a CFA or a CPA. But then on top of that, they've met significant requirements, both in terms of character, competence. They've had pastor references and client references, and they sign a statement of faith, adhere to a code of ethics, but also they've been trained in a university-level certificate course on the application of a biblical worldview to financial decision-making. So there's 1,300 of them around the country. I would head to our website, at least as part of your consideration, and just click Find a CKA at MoneyWise.org. You could do a zip code search, and I would probably interview at least two or three before you selected the advisor you were looking for. And then you could have that person begin to weigh in on your allocation today, and then be prepared for that person to take over and manage these assets when you're ready to separate from the company.
Sure. I appreciate the information. Thank you so much.
You are welcome, Chris. Thanks for your call today. God bless you. If we can help you further along the way, don't hesitate to reach back out. Well, we're going to take a quick break here in just a moment, but when we come back, a lot more of your questions, some great ones coming up. Let me just remind you, as we head toward year end, this is a great time for you to know that we rely on your listener support for the work that we do here at MoneyWise Media. If you want to consider a gift here between now and December 31st, it would go a long way to helping us meet our budgets, stay on track, and be ready for another great year of ministry next year. If you want to help us teach and train others, or you're a part of the MoneyWise family, you can make a monthly or one-time gift to MoneyWise again by December 31st by going to moneywise.org and just click the Give button. You'll find a way to give online securely or over the phone or even through the mail. Again, it's moneywise.org. Just click Give. And thanks in advance. We'll be right back with much more. We're delighted you're spending some time with us here at MoneyWise on American Family Radio, where we apply God's wisdom to your financial decisions. Back to the phones we go to Washington. Paul, thanks for calling today, sir. How can I help?
I may be wrong about this, but it seems like I heard that you could make charitable contributions out of your 401k that were tax-free.
Unfortunately, that is not true. You may be talking about a qualified charitable distribution or a QCD, but you can't make one directly from a 401k. You would need to do a rollover to a traditional IRA first, and then you can make the qualified charitable distribution from there. So if you've separated from the company, then you would be able to easily roll out that 401k to an IRA, and there that would be the opportunity then to, once you're 70 and a half, to do a qualified charitable distribution where it's not added to your adjusted gross income. So there's no taxes owed. And then the charity or ministry gets the full value of your donation. And then at 72, you're also satisfying your required minimum at that point.
Okay. Well, I have a IRA and a 401k. So I could make, because I rolled part of my 401k into an IRA. So I
okay,
could make,
yeah.
I can make charitable contributions out of my IRA?
Yes, that is correct. So you could do that. Once you're 70 and a half, you can make that contribution directly from an IRA through what's called a qualified charitable distribution. So you would contact your broker-dealer, the custodian of that IRA, let them know that you want to do, or your advisor, let them know you want to do a qualified charitable distribution. They'll give you the paperwork, or you can complete it online. And basically, you can send up to $100,000 to a charity or ministry of your choice. They'd receive that. It would not be added to your taxable income. And then you could use it also to satisfy your required minimum if you have one.
Okay. So, but you have to be 70 and a half to do that.
You do, yeah. Otherwise, there really is no way to give directly to a charity. You'd have to take a distribution first, recognize it as income, and then turn around and make a charitable contribution at that point.
So I was 70 in September, but so next year would be my where I turn 70 and a half. Is that correct?
That's exactly right. So you'd be able to do that in the next calendar year with regard to the 2023 tax year.
Is there like a limit to how many times you can do that? Or is it like you can only do it once? Or
No, you could do that each year.
No, I mean, say I wanted to give money to several ministries.
Oh, yeah.
Could I do that multiple times in the year, or is there like a limit to how many times you can do that?
No, you could do that multiple times to multiple charities. It doesn't have to be just to one.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you've got a $100,000 limit for a potential total of $200,000 if you have a spouse as well.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't think I'd be giving that much. That would be 25% of my savings, but I will do some. That sounds like a good idea to me.
Yeah, and that limit is per year, so you could do this every year, and again, you could do it to multiple charities. So it's a great option to do a lot of giving that's very wise and effective because you're not paying any tax on it, and the charity's getting the full benefit of the amount coming out of the account. So just give your advisor or your custodian a call and let them know that that's what you want to do, although it sounds like it's going to wait till next year. Paul, thanks for checking in with us, sir. God bless you. To Avon, Ohio. Hi, Angie. How can I help you?
Hi, good evening. I have a couple questions regarding my current financial situation. I'm unemployed now due to a medical condition, and I get $1,600 in child support. I'm going to get $1,700 in Social Security. It's me and my two children, and I don't have enough money right now to pay the bills. I hope that I will soon, but I have a couple things that I have out there. Both the kids have life insurance policies for $50,000. I have one for $50,000, and I've got an old 401k with $12,000 in it, no savings.
Okay.
And I don't know what to do with that 401k, first of all.
Yeah. Well, let's leave that alone for now, because if we can avoid touching it, that's best, because it's never a good idea to take money out of a 401k just because it's expensive money. If you're under 59 and a half, there's going to be a 10% penalty, plus it's all going to be added to your taxable income for the year, so you have the taxes on top of that, so you could easily take 30% of that and send it to the government. I'd rather you leave it there, invest it, whether it stays in the 401k or you roll it to an IRA, and then you've got something working for your future. But beyond that, we've got to solve for you to be able to live within your means. And I realize you have a limited income. That sounds easier said than done, but we've got to get you to a place where you can cover your bills and you have a little bit of margin left over so that we can start to build up an emergency fund. You mentioned you have a couple of kids. How old are they?
7 and 8.
Okay. And you've got life insurance policies on them. So if they were to pass away, then there's a death benefit paid out?
Correct.
Okay. So that would be an unnecessary expense in my view. I mean, there's no real need for that. It's just something that's in your budget that you're paying for, you know, because the purpose of life insurance is really to offset a risk that exists. So if something were to happen to you, there's clearly a need as a single mom to provide for these kids, for whoever their new guardian would be, so that there's assets to provide for their care. You need a lot of life insurance up to the ability you can afford it. They don't need any life insurance. If the Lord were to take them home, there's not any kind of hardship that's placed on anyone else as a result of that premature death. And so that's just an expense we don't need. So if it were me, and ultimately you've got to make this call, I would drop those policies because you need every dollar back into your budget as possible. And the next step, I think, is to really then go back to that budget and begin to work on that in detail to determine exactly what you're spending and where by category, looking for every area to cut back. And then, to the extent you don't have an emergency fund, I would suspend any new retirement contributions right now, just so you can build up a little bit of a cushion. And I would look at increasing substantially that life insurance that you have that would benefit the kids, and make sure you've got a will to name their guardians and a plan for who would, have access to those assets that would use them for their care upon your death. So, you know, I think that's really your next step here, Angie, as you begin to try to get all of this in order. How far are you away from, you know, being able to cover all of your bills and have anything at all left over?
Well, I have been, I actually opened up a credit card because I couldn't afford things. So I've got like $2,000 in credit cards right now, but that's only on $1,600 a month. So I'm already not making enough right now.
Sure. Yeah. Are you able to work at this point?
No, I have, no, I have, stage 4 cancer and have a hard time just kind of doing normal things. So right now, no.
Well, I would look for any kind of assistance you can get with regard to food from the government. I would be making your church family aware of this need that exists because it's significant. I'd be looking to free up any kind of expenses that you possibly can, starting with those life insurance policies on the kids, and then kind of go from there. Let me have my team get your information, and we will have one of our coaches reach out to you to see if we can help you start working through your budget and give you some other ideas on perhaps how we can make all of this balance. There's no cost for that. So you stay on the line. We'll get your information, Angie, and we'll be right back with more Money Wise on American Family Radio. Well, we're thrilled you've joined us this morning for MoneyWise on American Family Radio, biblical wisdom for your financial decisions. Let's head to Missouri. Andrew, you're next on the program. Go ahead, sir.
Hi, Rob. First of all, thank you for your program. It's very helpful. Appreciate all your wisdom you share with all of us.
I appreciate that.
I have a 401k at work. A few years ago, it was tanking, and so I pulled out the management company and was just put it off into a safe bucket, all just managing it myself. And last year, it only made like 0.71% year to date. And I was thinking, what's a reasonable rate of return? Should I let the company's retirement managing company have it again? Or I don't know.
Yeah. When you said last year, are you talking, and then you said year to date, are you talking this year or 2021?
Yeah, 2022, it's only increased 0.71%.
Okay, and that's from January of this year to today?
Last week when I checked it, yeah.
Okay, that's phenomenal. Most people are negative on the year for this year. So we're in a really difficult market right now, just given what's gone on with runaway inflation, 40-year high inflation, and as a result of that, the Federal Reserve, which had historically, at least since 2008, 2009, kept the interest rates down near zero and created a lot of money in the system to really fuel this economy. It has resulted in sky high inflation on top of the pandemic and supply chain issues and, you know, issues around the rest of the world, whether that's China with the lockdowns and, you know, Japan has its issues. Europe certainly has its own with a recent liquidity crisis. And here we are in the United States, and you kind of put all that together and the market's been down, you know, more than 25%, although we've had a rally as of late. So the fact that you're invested and you're positive on the year is phenomenal. I think you've got to look over the longer term. I don't know how much data you have on your historical performance, but that would be more what I would be interested in as opposed to a particular period of time like year to date, especially given the unusual nature of this year. Do you have a sense of what the longer term performance has been over, let's say, the last 5 years?
I don't. That company took over a previous company, and, you know, I was really, I don't know, how do you find out what is their average rate of return for the people using their services? you know?
Well, I would ask them. I mean, you could certainly do the work yourself, but they should be able to give you that type of report with the push of a button, because what you're going to want to see is various time periods. What has it done over a year? What's it done over 3 years, 5 years? You'll want to see that return. They're going to have to factor in any withdrawals you took. It may not be any, but if there were, yeah, you'd have to factor that in, because that's not a part of the performance if you're taking money out. And then, you know, in addition to that, they would look at the performance and show you that versus what's called a benchmark. So depending on your age and the investment strategy, how much was to bonds, how much was to stocks, they should be able to compare your performance to what the overall market did with a similar strategy, to say, you know, if the market during this period was up an average of 8% a year and you're up an average of 9, or you're only up 6 versus the 8. I mean, that's the kind of information that would be helpful. And again, although you could calculate all of that, an advisor should be able to give you that analysis in a report. And I'd ask to be able to sit down and review that with them to be able to analyze how they've done and, you know, why they've done better or worse than the market, and discuss whether or not the strategy fits for you in terms of what you're trying to accomplish based on your age and objective. So I would be returning, you know, back to the person or the organization that's managing this to get that kind of report, and ask for them to do that either in person or virtually and review that with you.
Well, thank you.
Okay.
Yeah. I didn't know if there was a 10% annual return is reasonable, or 5, or...
You know, well, it just totally depends on what's the strategy. You know, some folks that are in or near retirement are going to have a much different, you know, objective in terms of capital preservation and income that might result in the target being an annualized 3, 4, or 5% a year, because they want to be very conservative. Others who are in their 20s and 30s might be looking to, you know, try to have a more of a growth oriented portfolio that will have more volatility. And they're, you know, hoping for 8%, 9, 10%, something like that. So you can't compare two different strategies and say there's just one expected return. It really is all dependent upon how much risk are you willing to take in exchange for what return. And you want to try to minimize your risk as much as possible in a way that matches what your objectives are, which has to do with your age and your risk tolerance. So I would re-engage your advisor to discuss this a little bit further and see what kind of reports they can furnish about how this has performed over time. And hopefully that'll give you the information you need. Andrew, thank you for your call, sir. Stafford, Arizona. Hey, Arnold, how can I help you, sir?
Yes, Rob. I had a question pertaining to that CPA schooling. How long does that is that required to go to get that CPA certificate? And I'm an older gentleman, almost 70. I think I was wondering if that's too late to do something like that. That's my first question. And then
Yes, sir.
Got another question about the life insurance.
Okay. Now, you said CPA, which is Certified Public Accountant. What we were talking about today is what's called the CKA, the Certified Kingdom Advisor designation, which is really for those who are financial professionals or planning to enter financial services. And it's meant to be an add-on designation for those that want to specialize in bringing a biblical worldview of financial decision-making to their clients. And that CKA designation accompanies either at least 10 years of working in the business, which you wouldn't have if you're just entering into financial services, or you can bring with you a CFP designation, which that's typically a program that can take a year or so to complete, depending on how quickly you go through the curriculum. And then you need to have a couple of years, I believe it's 3 years of work experience before you could earn that CFP. But is that what you were asking about, the CKA designation?
Right. And and the other one, pretend a gentleman called in about his father, you know, paying those premiums. I'm in a similar situation. But I'm going to continue paying up because I had a stroke, and any other insurance company will not insure me again, you see. So I'm grandfathered in, so I got to stay in. That's the advice I'd give him, because you're going to, in the long run, you won't be able to buy another one.
Yeah. Do you have somebody that's depending upon you for your income? If the Lord were to take you home, Arnold, and you passed away, is there somebody that's counting on your ability to generate an income for their needs?
Oh, yes, I would leave it to my wife, and then she would leave it on to our two children, you know, if it's left.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, so you're exactly right. If somebody's still depending upon you for your income, your death would create a hardship for them because your income goes away. And absolutely true, if you've qualified for a policy that's in force and you have had a stroke and that would create a challenge for you to get another policy, your ability to keep that in current is critical because you wouldn't be able to replace it otherwise. So appreciate you calling, sir. God bless you. To Florida we go. Brenda, how are you today? How can I help you?
Hi. Okay, so I'm turning 60 on Friday, and I've been wanting to drop my supplement plan. I've been on disability for a long time, so I'm on Medicare, and I've had United Healthcare for AARP as a supplement, and it's gone up from beginning that I had it $450 a month and to $919 a month, and they say I have Plan F. They say if I drop it now, I'm guaranteed to get it back as long as I don't take an Advantage plan. But they don't pay over, I did the math, and they don't pay $1,000 in even 5 months of my medical costs. Medicare picks up most everything. So I just see it as I should bank $919 for myself and pay a $25 doctor's office when I go, or $35.
Yeah, I mean, that's sky high there, Brenda. I would look around. You know, the average Medigap premium across all plans in 2022 is $128 a month, which is quite a bit away from $919. Now, some Medigap plans have far fewer enrollees than other types of plans, which could dramatically increase the premiums. And it seems like that may be what's happening to you at $920 a month. So what I would do is shop it around, try looking into other Medigap plans or even Medicare Advantage plans. You know, some Medicare Advantage plans don't require any premium above your Medicare premium, the existing premium. And so I would absolutely shop this around and see if you could get something that's far more affordable as you think about the future here, so you can have the coverage you need, be able to get the care you need, but not anywhere close to that kind of out-of-pocket expense. Hopefully that's helpful to you, Brenda. This is a great time for you to shop that around, so we appreciate your call today very, very much. Well, folks, that's going to do it for us. So thankful to have you along with us today. Let me again remind you, as we press toward year-end, if you'd consider a gift to the ministry, we'd be grateful as we head toward our year-end goal to be able to plan for our ministry endeavors next year. Whatever you might consider as a gift, we'd be grateful. You can give it quickly and easily online at moneywise.org. Just click give. You can give online, through the mail, or over the phone. MoneyWise on American Family Radio is a partnership between American Family Radio and MoneyWise Media. Thank you to all the wonderful people who make this program possible, and thank you for being here as well. We'll look forward to having you back tomorrow. God bless you.